time for glory in the infantry. Oh, they've got no use for praises loudly sung, but in every soldier's heart, in all the infantry, shines the name of Roger Young.
Action!
Hello and welcome to the Action Movie Landfill, part of the Odd Job Pod, where we delve back into films from anywhere from the mid-80s to the early 2000s. Those that should be resurrected from the bottom of the landfill, those that should have never have been in the landfill in the first place, and those that very much deserve to be thrown back in, stamped on, and then probably set on fire. Today, we are going to be delving into a late-ish 90s action film, one that is very, very misunderstood. But first, I'd like to introduce my my co-hosts, Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
And Graham Sibley.
Hello.
And I have one question for you. Would you like to know more?
Click here. Yeah. Isn't it great? The early days of the internet when people really didn't know how to use the internet. And that included people who actually made the internet. But a very, very innocent time, wasn't it? So, yeah, a lovely look back that was. That really did give me a nostalgic buzz, that did. That. Would you like to know more?
Yes, all it needed was the AOL. If you have no idea what we're talking about, listeners, and you probably should do if you've actually seen the episode title on your podcast platform of your choice, we will be talking about Starship Troopers. It has been, I think it's fair to say, it was not particularly loved by critics or audiences on its release. But over the last 30 years, or near 30 years, it has gone quite a critical reappraisal. So it's a lot of shooting bugs in space. What's not to love on the action movie landfill for that? But let's delve in a bit to why this film was so despised on its release and why it is now gaining traction as a cult classic. Start with you, Graham. Do you remember Starship Troopers, and can you from the 90s, and can you understand why it was really disliked or just kind of flopped on its release in 97?
I do remember it coming out, and I do remember not seeing it at the cinema, basically because everyone told me it was awful. Do I regret not seeing it at the cinema? I don't think I do. I don't feel like I missed out. And that probably gives you a hint as to my appraisal of the film now, having watched it again. I think at the time there was an expectation of science fiction movies, and I think if you look at the big blockbuster hit of the same year was Men in Black, and I think that's what the expectation was. Very, very similar in the amount of effects led, the fact that it was effects led, and I think that was probably what more people were going for. Yes, there is the subtext of Starship Troopers that Men in Black obviously doesn't have, or if it does, it's in a completely different direction and probably isn't really something that anyone really put in it intentionally. But I think that was more satisfying to people, to cinema goers, as a summer blockbuster. And then you get Starship Troopers, which ostensibly looks like a B movie, and in all intents and purposes is a B movie. But with a $100 million budget, and so it's not surprising that it didn't hit. None of the actors in there were stars at the time. They're all it's replete with a load of character actors, a load that will be in other films in the landfill past and future, and some actors who will have a brief bit of stardom after this film, but then pretty much disappear back into obscurity. I'm not surprised it bombed at all, and I am slightly more surprised by the fact that it's become a cult classic, to be honest. But Terry may have different ideas.
Well, Terry, I mean, you know, when you look at the there was Men in Black, there was Fifth Element, there was a lot of sci-fi action happening around that time. It was definitely 96, 97, 98, definitely the years for really mining sci-fi. So it had a lot of films around at that time. And then you had it marketed, and, you know, if you watched the first 20, 30 minutes or so, and you knew nothing about the film and you kind of weren't watching too closely, you'd think you were just in for some kind of like high school buddy movie in space, potentially, or if you weren't looking too deeply into it. So I'm personally not entirely surprised that it confused people a little bit, especially given that if you were turning up and expecting to just sit and munch on your popcorn.
Yeah, I think it is definitely a film that sits in between those other two films that you've talked about, Men in Black and Fifth Element. Fifth Element is your more thoughtful movie that is encouraging you to elevate your thinking a little bit and you know, have some fun Luc Besson style. But it is, shall we say, a more thoughtful, more intelligent movie. Men in Black was the more, you know, fun action, recognizable stars in it. And Starship Troopers was sort of like, yeah, as Graham is right, had this kind of B movie quality, but wasn't a B movie. It was supposed to be a tentpole sci-fi blockbuster. But the approach was very, very reminiscent of, yeah, B movies. I think about maybe Roger Corman when I think about Starship Troopers. So it's a kind of movie that Roger Corman would most definitely have made had he the budget afforded to him, and he had the license to afford to him. It's an odd film, obviously, because it does have, on the one hand, a very, very over on the nose political message. In my opinion, it does. It is very, very, very clearly a satire of and depiction of a sort of dystopian or false utopian fascist society, it's unambiguously the case. But it is also, and perhaps primarily, a fun action movie, and with relatable and engageable characters, played by very, very good actors for the most part, and more than competently made. I mean, beautifully. I mean, the effects were sensational. Direction is great. Verhoeven is a very, very good filmmaker. It's got a dynamite script. It's a terrific film to watch. It's a lot of fun to watch. And you can happily and effortlessly watch this film as though you were watching a fun space bug movie. And I think and feel primarily that that is what it is. I don't think that it's... I think that Verhoeven has proved to be quite good in the past of actually making quite over on the nose political statements and not allowing it to necessarily interrupt the flow of a good fun action film. And I think RoboCop is the other example of the two that he has made in that vein. And that's what I think Starship Troopers is. I think that's how it should probably be seen, primarily. And I think that's probably why when they were making it, the network, the execs would have been quite pleased with it until they saw the gate receipts. I didn't see it in 1997. I didn't go to the pictures. Like Graham, I'd heard that it was just a sort of like, you know, cheap, like brainless space romp. And I, at that moment in my life, I wasn't ready for that. And I didn't want to see that. I just thought it would be rubbish. And then when I did see it, I thought, I should have, Verhoeven, RoboCop, I get it, okay. And then was able to look at it through a slightly different filter, I think. And I have enjoyed it ever since. And I reckon I probably watched it 5 times now over the last 30-odd years, including having read the book because I was curious about the film as well. So I think it is a film that's worthy of study and analysis, but I think it's also, I don't think you should be down on people who just want to watch this film and have fun watching people shooting bugs. I mean, that's also a perfectly legitimate way of expressing your enjoyment of this film.
Yeah, there's we'll keep on, just because there's so much that I want to talk about with Starship Troopers, and I think, like you, I missed, like both of you, I missed it at the cinema. I think I watched it a couple of years later on DVD and just went, I don't really get it. And then watched it again and went, oh, okay, yes, no, I can see a lot of different things in here. I think you've got to be mentally ready to, or mentally ready to engage. And if you watch it in a first pass, you're probably, and without too much expectation, some of it could be a little bit, it's fine. But then when you watch it and engage, which is kind of quite rare, because there is quite a lot to unpick in your head as you're going through. But Graham, you do, given that, the studio system, given all the blockbusters that were kind of coming out, and ultimately, if you look at Verhoeven's, two of his other most famous films, which Terry's alluded to, is RoboCop, and one of my personal favourites, actually, Total Recall, which is just, for me, one of my most fun, enjoyable movies. They are, they're action romps, but they are incredibly political. And you do, given the source material, you do wonder whether the studio realised what they were doing by bringing in, by having Verhoeven, and what is essentially adapting quite a right-wing text into cinema audiences. It's something that I think if you wrote it down now, people would look at it and going, you're making what now?
Yeah, definitely. I think if they made it now, I think people would know exactly what people were doing right now, remaking a copy of that book. But that is something that is worth looking at, though, because, I mean, I'm sure we'll get on to the author and his political views, but it's not just as straightforward as saying, oh, yeah, this is a hit back against fascism. It definitely is, but it's a hit back at fascism in a 90s flavour. If you were to do this now, would you have such an integrated a group of individuals? Would it be the racial mix or the sexual mix that it is, considering what modern the tones and the direction that modern fascism is going in? If you look at that, where you see a group, Heinlein is set himself as an author was certainly one who would introduce characters from that were different races. They weren't all white. And in fact, in the book, he's Filipino, Rico. This is not something. If this film was made today, it would probably be all male. If they wanted to have that gung ho, fascist feel about it. I think the cast would look more like Predator than Starship Troopers.
Yeah, I think if it was done today, it would be a more straight down line adaptation of Heinlein's novel rather than the satire that Verhoeven did, if you want to call it a satire. And I acknowledge that maybe that isn't the right word for this movie. I think that today it would be just a fascist movie. I mean Heinlein's. It should be Heinlein fought during the Second World War. He fought against the Nazis in the Second World War. I don't think anybody really characterised him as being a Nazi sympathiser. I don't think anyone characterised him necessarily as being a fascist, but I think that they found a lot of his views or a lot of what was said in Starship Troopers as being somewhat problematic. and particularly, you know, with the idea of citizenship and the notions of citizenship, certainly, you know, do lend themselves to sort of, you know, fascist politics. Verhoeven hated the book, reportedly, and the film was a response, if you like, to the book. I think it has been interpreted as such. Again, it is funny. It does feel as though this film is often overanalyzed, but we are here to analyze it, so that's cool. But it seems a bit weird that there's this big bug movie and we're discussing, you know, fascism and notions of fascism and different strands of fascism. But I think Graham's right. Today, this movie would be mostly white, and the only female characters in there would also be white. And I don't know. I mean, it just feels as though it would probably be a lot more white and less diverse, and definitely anti-woke. It would have a very strong anti-woke message, I think, were someone to adapt this movie now. And I think that would obviously be a shame. But I think it would send the whole, you know, debate about this movie, and there is a debate about this movie, into something of a tailspin. It's a commentary on fascism, but it is also a commentary on US militarism as well.
Yeah.
And it's grounded in the 1990s. Mm. And in that kind of like end of the Cold War, pre-9/11, you know, sort of like spot where nobody quite knows what we should be talking about at this point. And Verhoeven uses this as an opportunity, I think, to make some remarks about a fascist society. And it is, I think, clearly fascist. But again, the characters are what make this film watchable, in my opinion.
Just as we, yeah, I think, let's not words I ever thought I'd utter on this podcast, but let's take a diversion into fascism. Terry.
Again.
Yeah. I mean, probably fits in very well with the current internet sphere. Maybe people will misunderstand this pod as well. Terry, the other interesting element onto that is that you've obviously got Heinlein's source novel, and then you have a director who actually grew up in a Nazi-occupied country. And that's, you know, you can see how much that's informed his work. Again, bringing those two together is, can you understand kind of the reason that Verhoeven approached the film as he did?
Yeah, I think that he saw an opportunity to make a statement. I think Starship Troopers occupies a certain status within the science fiction world. It's a highly regarded novel. It's a controversial novel, but I think is seen as being something of a genre-defining novel as well. I think it's the first sort of like first reference to things like giant mech suits and stuff like that, which of course has set off a whole subgenre of science fiction, not without fascist overtones, some of it as well. I think he saw this as his opportunity to make a statement, make a comment on fascism, on about US militarism, and how the two are quite close, and to an extent, I guess, about US media. Although I think not that much. I think he did a much better job on that with RoboCop, which is a film that we're not discussing. We could easily drift into a discussion about RoboCop in this podcast, because they are worth comparing those two films. I think his use of the media thing in RoboCop is actually a lot more effective. I think that there's part of the media stuff here is obviously to hammer home the fascist propaganda and the fact that this is fascist propaganda. I mean, like lifting or, you know, taking from, it's from Triumph of the Will, which is the 1930, I'm sure we all are aware that a lot of those early sequences in the news coverage, the newsreels at the beginning of Starship Troopers are taken from Triumph of the Will. Mm. And I mean, which is a film that he was made to sit and watch. It was made by the Nazis in the 1930s. And he was as a child to watch that movie, a propaganda movie espousing the virtues of Nazism. And so you know, the references to fascism are quite obviously there. They are right on the nose. You can't say anything. They can't say that they're not. And I think it's daft to say that they're not. But yeah, I don't know where I was. I've lost my thread. Where was I going with this?
Well, I mean, I was the before I ask my next question, one little anecdote that I've read as I was researching this is that given the costumes that Neil Patrick Harris had to wear, that on set he was known as Doogie Himmler.
I mean, it's good, yeah. But people don't sort of like see that. I mean, there are people who looked at those and just like think that that's fine. There are genuinely people who look at that and say, well, no, there's nothing fascist about that. They're just like really cool uniforms.
He's genuinely dressed as like... Herr Flick from the Gestapo, isn't he?
He is. Yes. I mean, maybe that's what this film needed, was Herr Flick popping up midway through. And maybe if they'd, you know, I mean, it's not too far for Verhoeven to go from Starship Troopers to chasing after the Madonna with the big boobies.
With the big boobies. Well, the thing is, though, you wouldn't put it past Verhoeven to do that. And obviously he would have to put the big boobies in the middle of the screen because he cannot help himself. He has to do it. He did Total Recall. He had even had a woman with three boobs. That's how much he loves.
He does like a boob, doesn't he?
He loves boobs. He loves gratuitous violence. And I think in some ways, that just anchors him in B movie. It's got all the nature. This could be Tobe Hooper. You mentioned Roger Corman. It could definitely be that. But it's got all those little tiny things that just say straight to video. And I think that's the general feel of it. I think a lot of things, well, we say about the book and about how he hated the book. I'd say one guy who didn't hate the book was James Cameron. James Cameron loved the book. James Cameron made the actors on Aliens read the book.
Read. Hmm.
Yeah. And that's what he based the whole thing of Aliens on, was on the book of Starship Troopers. This is the one thing that hit me when I watched it again, was I thought, actually, I see what the problem is now with Starship Troopers. It's just, the problem is not people missing the point or of it or anything. It's just the fact that this film was already made in Aliens. Someone actually did the whole sort of like you know, the space marines going out and going on a bug hunt. And I think, the problem with Starship Troopers is it's like, you know, if someone made Dune after someone made Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, or someone made Star Trek after someone made Star Wars.
Can you imagine what that would have looked like? I mean, they might have done something like cast Sting in there. Or,
well,
or
maybe. Something stupid like that. Get someone like some Shakespearean actor who's never been in sci-fi ever. God, what is he doing in sci-fi? You can't have that. Patrick Stewart? Oh, my God, no, he'll never last.
Just before we kind of, because there's so much to kind of move on, Graham, I just wanted to ask, at the time, when you read a lot of the reviews and a lot of the responses, was that people just went, oh, this is glorifying fascism. There was quite a lot of people like, oh, this is, you know, this feels like it's really gone into totalitarianism. It's, you know, it's glorifying this kind of extreme right-wing fascism. On one hand, I can understand it, but on the other hand, I'm also... having now rewatched it a few times, I'm also wondering how on earth people missed the commentary on what it was trying to do, because Verhoeven is many things, but he's not exactly subtle.
Oh, no, he's not subtle at all. But you know what people are like. I mean, people will watch this and take whatever they want from it. And if these things are things that you think are okay and cool, then fine, why not? Because that's the problem with it as a satire, is that no one really gets their comeuppance. This is that they win. So they are, and their way of life continues. And so there is no moral to the story. It's just, yeah, this is a bunch of fascists doing fascist stuff. And they're living in this awful world. This whole thing of citizenship, about like service guarantee citizenship. When I saw it, I thought this is some kind of like vague, weird sort of like interpretation of Hellenistic lifestyle of like the ancient Greek cities where citizenship was a privilege, which was something that you earn, and you earned that by being a citizen soldier. So in the ancient cities of like Athens and Sparta and things like that. So is this where Heinlein's getting that idea from? Is this his interpretation of citizenship there? But then you have to know quite a bit about, well, you don't have to know a lot, but you have to know that this is an actual thing, and you have to like care about ancient Greek, and if you sit and think about ancient Greece like some people do. But I'm not sure Verhoeven's really going for that. I think he is literally going for his own experiences, which is fine, right? Develop it from your own experience. But putting it in front of a 90s audience that really fascism wasn't on the agenda back then either. So it comes in at a time when you're thinking, well, what have we got to worry about fascism for? This is the 90s. Everything's cool, guys, isn't it?
James Bond doesn't know who to attack, so he goes after the media moguls in there. And yes, he cried. And you know, it did mean that you know, people were familiar knowing that that Christmas only came once a year as well.
great characters.
Yes, wonderful. Harry, well, let's start moving a little bit more into the film, and because you mentioned the characters. Now, actually, to carry on a little bit of the theme, because it is obviously woven throughout, one of the things that I actually found most disturbing watching it again is just the evolution of Rico, Johnny Rico, as a character from a, you know, not exactly nihilistic, but a guy who basically doesn't know what to do with his life, signs up because the girl that he's after has also decided to go into military, very enthusiastically as well. And by the end of the film, almost becomes what you would say is a perfect soldier. And as Graham said, there's no comeuppance, but all he's doing is just going back into battle again, which, like, just seeing that evolution of the Rico character actually made me feel quite uneasy on the journey that he'd gone on, which I don't think I've seen this quite a few times, but this, you know, watching it in depth, this was something that really leapt out to me and left quite an uncomfortable feeling, because I obviously knew what Verhoeven was trying to do into there. What's your thoughts on the Rico character journey?
Yeah, I'm glad you felt uncomfortable, because I think you were meant to feel uncomfortable. I mean, I think the thing about Rico is that, generally speaking, he's an engageable character. He's likable. I mean, you don't want to say it. All of these people exist in a fascist dystopia, but they're all characters that the audience are encouraged to like and get behind and root for. And at various points, we see tragedy and we see nobility and we see courage and we see foolishness and all of those things come in. And Rico's journey is an extraordinary one. Yeah, he starts off, he's a jock, he's the top jock, he's the football player. He gets to fuck the prom queen to all intents and purposes, you know. But yeah, he's in Michael Ironside's class and openly understands the texts for which he has been indoctrinated in all of these, he's been instructed on all of these years, but doesn't openly admit that he doesn't understand the meaning of them. And so he just goes off chasing his whims and, you know, for all the wrong reasons, pursues citizenship. He doesn't want to be a citizen because he wants to serve, you know, the planet. He wants to be a citizen because, you know, he wants to remain in Denise Richards' pants. Many would say this is a just reason. Others wouldn't. But then he starts off as this guy who feels there's no consequences to all the decisions that he makes. And indeed, for a moment, I mean, and then obviously he's confronted with, you know, the horror of making a bad decision in command, seeing his parents and his home city completely and utterly wiped out, and then goes on this journey where he becomes, yeah, this poster boy for the mobile infantry. But you are left at the end of the movie, or I am left at the end of the movie, I'm watching thinking these people are fucked. They are all going to die, probably very horribly, at the end of some kind of horrible spike. And that's the, for me, that's where the uncomfortableness comes through there. And I can say it's without most of these characters, but particularly the protagonists, and particularly Rico, is that he appears to be an otherwise decent man who has been, who is just a product of this ghastly, grisly society. And it's right to feel uncomfortable.
There's nothing likable about Rico. I mean, like, you know, if he gets eaten by a bug halfway through the first act, then no one sheds a tear, do they?
I quite enjoyed him and liked him. I didn't. Maybe I'm the fascist, Graham. I don't know. I mean, I suppose you're probably right.
And that's one thing, Graham, that Verhoeven does quite a lot into here, which. You know, you see in other films, but is probably taken to the extreme here, is just how disposable a lot of the characters are on screen. You're brought into people and then within, you know, 10, 15 minutes of their introduction, suddenly they've been ripped in half by a giant bug, which again, like when you look at conventions, yes, you're always going to get, you know, certain people who die. But at the same point, other than the protagonists, and not all of them survive as well, there is a that sense of disposability, I think, for me, is one thing that really comes through. And that again, was something that I, you know, watching it again, really felt from a commentary perspective, was just like, yeah, as Terry said, these people are all fucked. They are undoubtedly going to die. And nobody, you know, in this kind of society, doesn't matter who you are or what your intentions are, you're going to be fed into a bug.
Yeah, I guess so. But there are definite red shirts in this, aren't there? There are definite ones who turn up. They get rinsed for as much as they can, and then that's it. They're dead. So it's I think you get that. I mean, maybe Zim is lucky to survive, but I mean, he gets to be a hero of sorts, I suppose, at the end. He has his own arc. Whether or not he deserves an arc or not, I don't know. But he's there getting his. But yes, life is cheap in this world. But then again. Maybe people are just bored. I mean, that's what you can do. You can overanalyze this. That why on earth do they still have infantry in this era where they've got interstellar travel? Why are they still putting boots on the ground? What the hell is going on here? And there doesn't seem to be any reason for it other than the fact that it looks cool, and which just adds to the whole B movie element to it. I mean, the fact that most of the action is in a quarry does give that whole Doctor Who vibe to it as well. So that obviously doesn't help. But the effects in it are lush, absolutely lush for the 90s. I mean, you could think, like, this is only a few years into CGI, so it's and a lot of the stuff. I think a lot of the swarming stuff there of all the aliens. I think that was originally that's actually using the same program that was used in Lion King for the stampedes, and I think it was a direct port over to create the stampedes, which were incredibly effective, and yet that's what creates an imbalance in this film, because you get this whole thing of, like, life is cheap and everything like that, but it's done in such a lush way that it works really well. But then as well, you've also got the Roger Corman-esque stuff of George A. Romero stuff of Zim putting a knife through one of the recruits' hand on the wall or something like that. And it's all just this sort of stuff that just makes it a bit more. I think you're laughing at it, I think that's another thing that turns some people off of this film is the fact that you don't know what the joke who is the joke on. Is the joke on people who watch the film and take it seriously? That's I think that's something else. Then that takes satire into a different direction. If the film is taking the piss out of the viewers, where does that sit as a satire then? I don't think that's a topic of discussion that cannot be contained in something that basically has the premise of fishing films out of a landfill site and thinking, is it still good or not?
It's certainly a film that does raise a lot of questions. And I mean, my sense is that Verhoeven deliberately leaves a lot of those questions open as well. Mm. Also, he probably not so deliberately. That was one of my thoughts as well, is we're in interstellar travel. I've seen Star Trek. We've all seen Star Trek. We know that you can have lasers in space. So why aren't you using freaking laser beams to shoot these bugs rather than just
if all they can do is like push asteroids in your direction, then really, I mean, landfall is not what you should be thinking about right now, unless you want these people to die, unless you've got to have. I mean, there is a Star Trek episode where people are there, where technology is lifted so much that war is actually made obsolete, but people still have to go into death booths to die just to make sure that there is that peace is maintained. And it's got that feel about it. People are just being put in the meat grinder just for the sake of being put in the meat grinder. Now that is satire.
Yeah, if you want to ascribe perhaps more to the movie than there is, you can say that the mobile infantry exists specifically for that. It's effectively a disintegration chamber. It's an institution of the fascist state in order to fascists to be fascists and say, well, we're going to have a mobile infantry, we're going to go to war, we're going to do pointless wars, and we're going to work through and have cannon fodder, because that is what states have always done, particularly fascist states. You could look at it like that. You might be ascribing too much to the movie, I think, if you do. But I mean, you know, I think it's great that if you want to think about it in those terms, it feels to me that what they needed to do was they wanted to make an adaptation of Heinlein's novel. And, you know, that's basically, it's set around the mobile infantry. So if you don't do a mobile infantry, then, you know, you need to adapt a different book and make a different film. And I suppose the inherent problem tensions, shall we say, within the movie are laid bare, and maybe that's one of the reasons why for a lot of people the movie perhaps doesn't land, because it doesn't make sense in that respect. I mean, like, very little of it makes sense, and but because it's got this strong fascist subtext, you can allow yourself to go, well, you know, it's a commentary on fascism, and fascism doesn't make sense, so it's all great, and I'm very, very smart, you know. But in fact, what's happening here is that we're watching a really, really fun action space movie with some, you know, I think some, you know, pretty decent, pretty, you know, right on messages about, you know, fascism's bad, okay? US militarism's bad, okay?
So it's
the kind of movie that Mr. Mackey would write.
So why aren't we seeing people like bringing back Showgirls then? Why isn't that one getting the treatment? Because hey, if this is a satire, so is Showgirls, and not just a titty flick.
I thought it was just a titty flick.
Well, it is that as well. But hey, that's the beauty of it. You see, that's why Starship Troopers is an action B movie. It's also a satire against fascism.
I think that the reason for that is because the fan base of science fiction likes to have these kind of conversations going. Whereas I think the fan base of titty flick movies just like to watch titty flick, to watch tits.
Well, there is
And are less concerned about subtext and not worried too much about whether or not You know, not very few fan bases are able to have arguments with themselves over these kind of things than science fiction fans, and they do love it. And who am I? I'm not here to get in their way, but at the same time, and also frankly, I haven't actually seen Showgirls.
I have not seen Showgirls either. I know Verhoeven is very, like, again, I think it was a film that, I mean, this might say more about Verhoeven than anybody else, that he was quite proud of. But as we say, we know what Verhoeven likes on screen. One of the things, Terry, that I picked up on, which is a really small point that I had spotted when I was researching, was that for a period, David Cronenberg was meant to be attached to this movie, which would have been which you can totally see why. I think roughly about the same point he was making Existence, which is also a kind of very B movie style. But yeah, a Cronenberg style take on Starship Troopers. You've got the same body horror that comes in there, but you know, you can see how with a, you could have a very, you could have a very straight down the line director. You've got Verhoeven, but this is also a film that could lend itself to this kind of indie on the fringes filmmaker like Cronenberg.
Yes. I feel tonally that would have been a different film. I wouldn't like to say whether or not it would have been a better film. It may well have been a better or more effective film. But I feel that Verhoeven's style, for me, tonally always feels, I don't know, there seems to be a sort of innocence about Verhoeven's filmmaking a lack of cynicism almost in his tone, in the tone of his films, in a way that kind of may also kind of grate against sometimes the subtext of his movies and what he's trying to say. I think Verhoeven isn't grim enough. He's saying stuff that's really grim, but his approach is really cartoonish. Comic book, I should say. Am I making any sense? Yeah. I don't know whether I'm making sense.
I think you are.
Cronenberg wouldn't be like that at all. Cronenberg was saying, yeah, I'm going to make a movie about space fascists and it's going to be really fucking grim.
Yeah.
Verhoeven goes, I'm going to make a movie about space fascists and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I think he sits in a tipping point, I think. I think when if you're looking at the other side of it, on the Cronenberg side, you could have had someone like Burton making this, or even David Lynch, or someone like that. Someone like that making this, or you go. You can do this stuff and still have very fun movies. I mean, like, people look at Dawn of the Dead. What is Dawn of the Dead? Is Dawn of the Dead a zombie movie, or is it an allegory about consumerism and capitalism? Yes, that's what it is. Yes. No. It's a zombie movie, isn't it? Come on.
No. It's a zombie movie. It is. It's a zombie movie, but it's remarkable what people get from the zombie genre from Romero. So, and I would love to, and that's part of the art of those Romero's films. I did a podcast with my friend John on about Night of the Living Dead, and we both ended up having to take. And I said that there were people who took spoilers at the end of Night of the Living Dead. Once they've survived the ordeal, the lead character emerges from the house, having survived the zombie attack, and order has been restored, and he's shot by a policeman. And he's shot, and people look at that, and the lead character is black. And like, it's the 1960s. What are we saying here? What's being said here? What's being said there? That guy was cast because he was the cheapest actor that they could afford. He was the only guy they could afford. And that is why he was cast. He had nothing to do with the colour of his skin. There's nothing about those Romero films that are there. But the fact that people can see that and look into that says something about the quality of which those movies have been made. And this, I think, is where you look at Cronenberg, because Cronenberg is very, very good, I think, of saying things without saying them. Verhoeven does not do this. Verhoeven says explicitly what is going on here. And to the point perhaps where it might come across as being crass and even open to misinterpretation, because people are not all together certain. Are you sure this is what you're saying?
Well, I put it another way, is how would this film have been like if John Carpenter had been directing it? Would it have been like more like a They Live or something like that?
So my thought went immediately to They Live, yeah. Which is out of landfill scope, sadly. And which is a shame, because that is a deeply political film. And Carpenter is capable of making political films. He's also quite capable of not making political films, to be perfectly honest with you. So I guess it very much depend on the brief that he got. I can't. There is a treatment somewhere, guys. There is a John Carpenter treatment of Starship Troopers. It might well be from when he was a student, and it may only have been a few pages long and not gone anywhere near. But there's no way that guy hasn't read that book, and no way has not thought about what his movie would have been like. That's just not, I mean, like, he's a filmmaker and he's a genre filmmaker. There's no way he wouldn't have thought about what he would do with that movie. And it would also be interesting to find out what his opinions are on that film. Because he has not lived through, I think a lot of this is also because of Verhoeven himself.
Yeah.
He lived through Nazism. He lived through the Nazi occupation. Carpenter didn't. Cronenberg didn't. And so perhaps that lends a certain perspective that comes through on the film. But I feel that Carpenter probably would have not been quite so upfront about the fascism. But he might have tweaked the characters to end in such a way as to reinforce the evils of fascism. Because as you say, I mean, like, you know, the good guys, generally speaking, win in this movie. And, or not the good guys, but the protagonists win in this movie. And even like Michael, I'm afraid I can't pronounce the name of probably Michael Ironside's character, who is very, very charismatic.
Mm.
And his charisma is there right from the off. And I feel that comes through to the audience. And I think the audience is encouraged to find him charismatic and like that character. But he is actually a despicable, horrific fascist who knows exactly what he is doing. He is a manipulator of young minds. He's a dastardly person. And he deserved to be chopped to pieces by a bug. But in fact, he meets a noble end that he would have wanted.
Yeah,
I mean, another director wouldn't have had that ending for him. We'd have all watched him get eviscerated by a bug, you know, or his brain sucked out or something like that. But they reserved that for, you know, a different character. And I think that's where this movie, I think, does not confuse people, but where people will take a specific view on this and say, well, you know, if it was a fascism is bad movie, then why weren't all the fascists bad? You know, I mean, and I hesitate to suggest that the movie's ambiguous, because it's not. It's a movie about bugs and shooting bugs. There's nothing ambiguous about it at all. But it is a film that is very much what it is. And it's like, I'm not here to provide, you know, American-style justice for the characters at the end of these movies so we can all leave feeling morally enriched. I'm here to tell you a story, one that satisfies the needs of the executive who want a space bug movie, and to tell you a story about fascism and about how fascism is. I think he does that.
There is, I mean, my brain started going into all kinds of places into there. Partly wondering what the Michael Bay treatment would have been like, which we won't get into, but I think we can all imagine.
I just watch Transformers. Just watch Transformers. You already know the answer to that question.
The other one,
Michael Mann's Starship Troopers.
Well, I was actually going to say, I think, now thinking about it, maybe Starship Troopers, or the message of Starship Troopers, was done, dare I say, even better, and with even less subtlety, by Trey Parker and Matt Stone in Team America World Police.
Yes.
Where I wonder how much I look at and go, yeah, there were bits which we can definitely do better from taking that, because they are two people not known for subtlety, but yes, also know how to make an incredibly funny action film with puppets as well, which might even end up in the landfill at some point. That was my thought as Terry was going, yeah, actually, I'd quite like to watch Team America World, please. Matt Damon. Graham, this is an action movie pod. We haven't talked too much about the action other than something you picked up on, which was the swarm element. And that, to me, there is a lot of like really well choreographed, you know, it is almost a non-stop role of action once we actually get into the fighting. And some of that is done really well. Like that particular scene for me, yeah, actually had me on edge, because that whole idea that it's a setup, and you know, it is a very, you know, it's a very visceral film, and it's one that has a lot of body horror in there. And suddenly knowing what's coming, that to me is probably one of the best scenes of the movie, when you take it as a kind of, almost if you want to take it as a straightforward action film. Yeah, there's a lot of very good action within there. That to me is probably, from an action perspective, one of the best kind of setups and scenes in the whole movie for me.
Yeah, yeah. The action is breathtaking. It really is, and it has a really good pace throughout the whole film. That's that as Terry alluded to earlier. He is a great filmmaker for doing this, and probably helped with a great editorial team there as well. But everything about that, it doesn't. There's no fat on this film, really. And sometimes you may need a bit just to give it a bit, make it a little bit squidgy, give you something to hold on to. But you cannot fault the action in this. I wonder how it stands up to those sort of other equivalents. I mean, because when you think about what the action was like in Aliens, which is, as we've said, is a proto version of this, which is all very constricted and claustrophobic. But when you get it out to this, this is fighting in the open spaces, and it's a completely different feel to it. But it means that everything is coming from every different angle, so you can't see where the attack is coming from. And the design of the aliens is brilliant. It's brilliant. I mean, if you look back, you don't have to go too many years before this film, when aliens are basically just men in suits. And this is what this really does, come up with something different, something really instantly that you can revile. The one of the best scenes in the film is the one with the video scene of the kids crushing the cockroaches, and it is that mentality in space, isn't it? It's like taking this kids just stamping on cockroaches and putting it in the middle of space, on, for some reason, on a planet that looks like a quarry, and you're just giving people guns to just shoot up aliens, and the aliens just keep on coming. There is no end to them, and that whole feeling of unsurmountable numbers coming towards you, it's brilliant. It's I mean, when they're in the little fort, which kind of looks a little bit like the stockade in Mad Max 2, a little bit like that. Almost expected to see, "We go in, we go in." This is the conversation by the the bugs.
No, we go in, kill them. No, Wiz, no.
Another film, sadly, just outside the landfill.
Yeah, not landfill compliant, sadly.
So things like that. I think there's so much before CGI was in the dark, in small rooms, and then this opens it all out, and it gives you this wonderful new branch of action. I mean, I suppose the closest thing you can get to the action in this is probably the first half hour of Saving Private Ryan, I suppose, isn't it? Which is which is considerably better. But if you're just going to put this in a popcorn film, then yeah, there you go. You've got give it the A movie effects in the, inside a B movie, and look what you get. You get something brilliant to watch.
And Terry, we've already had you allude to the fact that you just enjoy watching the fact that it is people shooting up bugs in space. I guess this is almost a redundant question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How's the action for you in this?
Yeah, I really enjoy the action. I mean, I think I've said I've watched it maybe five times. Each time I watch it, I still get excited. I'm on the edge of my seat, even though I know exactly what's going to happen because I've seen the film. I mean, that compound scene and the rescue of the compounds is genuinely edge of the seat exciting. The effects are terrific. And the depiction of those bugs is just amazing, and the savagery and the sheer alienness of them. The fact that there's an awful lot of screaming and suffering and cruelty and, yeah, body horror going on just makes them genuinely horrific. And so the film sort of transitions from being a sort of starting off as a kind of a bit of a sort of like a high school, possibly high school buddy movie to a sort of like a coming of age, sort of like, you know, all within the B movie context, coming of age, sort of like drama-ish, academy fun stuff that Americans are really, really good at making. And then suddenly becomes this horror show. I like watching Aliens, just a little bit different, and not as good, but by any means, but still, you know, very much, very visceral, very emotional, very, very difficult to watch sometimes, and very thrilling. I think the climax of the movie, the sort of action climax of the movie, is a little bit strange, and I think that that's where perhaps it all gets a little bit where Verhoeven is still probably is guilty of perhaps trying to overstretch the thing, the capturing the bug. I mean, Zinn capturing the bug, that all felt a little bit,
yeah,
he's a strange character, because we're invited to like him because he invites Rico to bite down on a piece of wood when he's about to whip his ass. I mean, like, he's a very cruel man, and yet we are invited to like him. But that whole thing at the end, like, he's afraid. I mean, like, I think it speaks to what Graham was saying earlier. Ari, at that point, are you kind of taking the piss out of the audience at that point? What are we all supposed to think about that? And that tends to leave me a little bit nonplussed. But all the stuff that goes on before then, all the tension that builds up there is really, really good. And even the little welcome break where, where they all have the beer and then the play a bit of football, have a bit of sex, and then it just goes straight back into the action just to give us all a little bit of respite. It's all, fun stuff, and I really enjoy watching this movie on that basis. I just really like the pace of the movie. I like the way that it all goes through, and the effects are great, and the space battles as well, just to give some props also to the spaceship design, the massive sort of, like, I don't know what you call them, whatever those bugs are shooting at those. You're looking at that, and you are looking and saying, you must have nukes, right? You're probably carrying nukes, right? I mean, like, the ground troops are carrying, I'm sorry to return to this point, but the ground troops are carrying nukes. So you must have nukes there. So why haven't, then the movie, is over much, much sooner, I suppose. And again, that's not the point. Not the point of fascism. The point of fascism is that you have an other to hate and to direct people's attention towards, even if they are literally on the other side of the galaxy. So you don't just go over there and chuck nukes down on there. You go over there and you defeat them face to face, man to man.
Yes. There are, I think you can probably say there is I think all agree Verhoeven knows how to make a very, very good action film. Even if you take out, you know, bits that you, or parts that you like, parts where you might be overthinking, parts where he might well be taking the piss out of the audience, from just a pure action perspective, Verhoeven knows what he's doing. And he's proved his chops with RoboCop and Total Recall as well. So, you know, that I don't think anybody can deny with Into There. And yes, special effects and everything, you know, look actually pretty good in when you realise this was a 90s film in 2026. So we've been talking about it for quite a while, so we will start to... There's still probably so much more we could talk about. Whether it deserves that much is another question. Going to ask to Graham first. How does this movie stand up today?
I think it stands up pretty well, actually. I mean, looking at it, I did think, has this been cleaned up? So I don't know if it has gone through a treatment, but it that's how good it looked to me anyway. Maybe it's my old eyes failing me, but it still looks pretty good. I do think the interiors of the spaceships, if I'm going to be really picky, do look a bit clunky, even for the 90s. I think 90s sci-fi had better design, I think, then. That's one thing. But I think other than that, I think it's especially as now when you know, fascism is right back in the fore again, then maybe this is something to look at. And actually people, a whole new generation could look at it and come up with different ideas about it. And then wonder, why are there so many tits in this film? what's that trying to tell us? It's telling you that he likes tits. That's what it's telling you.
Yes. Terry, how does the film hold up for you in this day and age?
So, yeah, technically, I think Graham's right. I think it's been cleaned up. I watched the Disney Plus. I watched it on Disney Plus. Yeah, I feel that has been cleaned up. It has scrubbed up very, very nicely. I think the budget, it was a very expensively put together film, but because it's trying to create a 23rd century version of Earth, some of the earlier scenes lack a bit of scope. There's a lot of classrooms and rooms, you know. I mean, like the football scene, for example, looked pretty low
rent. Go Flash.
Yeah, it that looked like it was like, well, yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about that. I mean, that would have been much more impressive if they'd actually been able to engineer a stadium, and that's, of course, the limitations of CGI at that time and possibly budget at that time. It's a very early example of how to do CGI right. I mean, like, yeah, you're only, as Graham says, you're only a few years away from, like, you know, guys wearing like alien costumes, you know, in order to turn up in movies about aliens. It's only a year after the abomination of Escape from LA, and it's horrific CGI in that. So, I mean, it really is extremely well done. I think today the film is more prescient for what it says about US society and US military society, rather than fascism per se. I think its depiction of fascism is rooted in Nazism from the Second World War, and I think modern fascism presents itself very differently. So I'm not altogether certain whether or not it's got much to glean from there. I think, however, if you're sitting down and saying, I'm going to watch a movie from the 1990s, I think you're gonna really enjoy that movie from the 1990s, and in that respect, it holds up as a product of its time. I don't think it necessarily is dated too much in that respect. I think it is a perfectly watchable, serviceable. So you could sit down with a Gen Z person and say, "This is a movie from the 1990s. What do you think?" And they're saying, "It's all right. What else is on?"
Yeah, I know that's a very good summing up. It's quite interesting, actually, that the last two action movie landfills that we've had, this one and Enemy of the State, actually both of which seem to take on a slightly different meaning as you go past 9/11 and beyond. So, yeah, there was some, you know, whilst they might not necessarily have always been as intelligent as maybe they think they are, they certainly had a level of foresight, which actually is good for any, you know, it's what any good science fiction does. It looks ahead, and it is science fiction, even if that goes into political spaces. And this is, yeah, I think I would agree with you, Terry, that I think audiences today who encounter the film for the first time, and once they get beyond a bit, I think they, you know, probably a few elements on it, I suspect they will probably get it a lot better than audiences did back in 97. But that's partly because of where we are in the world and the geopolitical situation. That said, there is a key question, and Graham, go to you first. Is this landfill?
No.
Oh, why?
No, it's not. I mean, it has its flaws. It has problems, and it is a complex film. It asks complex questions, I think, and I think that alone means it's watchable and it is recommendable as well. So you can say to people, watch it and make your own mind up, or just watch it and just enjoy it for what it is. And I think on that level, it certainly deserves being fished out of the landfill.
Terry, I think I know your answer to this. Is it landfill?
No, it's not landfill. More than anything else, because it is a much discussed movie. This is a much discussed and analysed and overanalysed film. It is ascribed way too much intelligence than it has. Way too much. But at the same time, there are people who just say, no, it's just a dumb action film. Everything's fine with this movie. What are you talking about? This film seems to just like provoke so many different responses for what is a dumb space movie. But with a strong political message and commentary. It is both a substantial film and a completely insubstantial film. I mean, this movie is whatever you want it to be. I mean, like sometimes you can go, fascism. Let's do military industrial culture. Or go, space war. Or Dina Meyer's tits. You know, whatever you're in the mood for. I mean, it gives an awful lot, given that in many, many ways, it's a film that really should be quite forgettable. It should just be an enjoyable diversion. And yet it is a film that endures. They're still, you know, I mean, like they only released a Starship Troopers game this year. I mean, like the franchise endures. I have no doubt that it will be revisited at some point. I'm certain Heinlein's work will be revisited at some point. Someone will go back to that source material. So, yeah, it's definitely not landfill. But at the same time, it definitely is. Chuck it in there. Tell you what. Keep the Blu-ray, chuck the DVD in.
That's a compromise.
I'm on the fence with this one, mate.
I do not think it's landfill. I am not sure where it exists. I think I once read a review of William Shatner's album of covers, where he covers songs such as Pulp's Common People. And the reviewer basically said, this is beyond the star system. It just exists somewhere totally different from anything else. And I cannot possibly work out where it sits. So I can't give you, I can't tell you whether it's good or not. Now, I think, you know, Starship Troopers has those elements. It is, as Terry said, it's landfill and it's not landfill. It exists in some kind of weird stasis that's between landfill and not landfill. It's the many films that we've touched on are quite clearly landfill or quite clearly not landfill. This one, and it probably speaks to why it has endured so much, just nobody can quite put it anywhere. And you've probably got a 50-50 split. So I'm going to say it's in some cryo chamber somewhere that is neither landfill or... neither landfill or not landfill.
I will add one more thing, and I think this might be worth saying. It's not as good as RoboCop.
No.
And it's RoboCop on every level does a much better job of doing what Starship Troopers is trying to do.
Yeah,
its messaging is a lot sharper, a lot more on point. The characterizations, a lot of the characters are better. The world building is better. Leaving aside the action sequences, which are quite different, but I'm going to suggest that if you look at RoboCop and Starship Troopers and put them together, you were to put a checklist down, you'd probably find that RoboCop gets more ticks than Starship Troopers does, and I think that should tell you something about the movie.
Yes,
definitely.
Yeah, completely. There's a take up from this. Watch Starship Troopers because you'll probably find a lot out of it, but then go and watch RoboCop because RoboCop is a pretty fantastic movie, and one that I think is. I don't think we'd ever consider RoboCop Landfill on this pod remotely. Anyway, I think we've got to that point where whose job is it to pick the next landfill? Mr. Sibley, the floor is yours.
It is me. I'm going to, around about the same time, going 1998. And I think we've been having deep discussions lately about the choices of films. And sort of discussions that we weren't really predicting we'd have on a strand of our podcast about action movies from the 90s and nearabouts. So I'm going to take it back, and I'm going to go for a pure late 90s action movie that we can all just relax and just not worry about geopolitics or anything like that. Except if you look at the director's wiki page. Don't do that if you just want to enjoy the film. Okay. I am going for a Hollywood film with Jackie Chan in it.
Oh.
And I am going for Rush Hour.
Like it. That's definitely a shift in tone from where we've been, and probably a very welcome one. I'm looking forward to that, Terry.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, of course, everybody understands that that is actually a pastiche on communism, right? And we all know that, right? I haven't saw the film I've seen in Donkeys, and that is that's nice. That's going to be a proper nice action film. I've been thinking to myself, at what point do we drift into Hong Kong movies? What time? You know, I mean, because we've done a couple, you know, but this. This feels right, Graham. Nice choice. And yeah, a good palate cleanser, I think.
Palate cleanser.
Well, you say that, but I'm sure we're going to have at least a quarter of an hour talking about Brett Ratner in the next one. So, yeah.
Well.
guys, you don't have to watch his latest film, okay? Just so we can talk about it, okay? I'll give Terry 2 minutes to find out what Brett Ratner's latest release was.
I'm just going to pause there because I think we need to build up tension for the listeners. Graham, can you describe what's happening to Terry's face right now?
He's
oh Jesus! Oh my God!
Made your homework, Terry.
Okay. I think I might just stick to the source material if that's okay with you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my Lord. Oh, my God. Oh, no. Oh, this is awful. let's stick to the source material. Stink. Icky. Oh.
You looked at the wiki page, didn't you? You looked at the wiki page.
I did. I looked at it and I scrolled up and I was like, oh, allegations 2017. Oh, no. This ends badly.
Yes.
Right. Well, yes. Anyway. Okay. Well, that's fine. Yes. Nevertheless.
Nevertheless. Yes. Rush Hour.
Rush Hour.
Yes.
Jackie Chan.
Excellent. All right. Jolly good. This is where we are going next. We are going into the Hong Kong Kung Fu pastiche. Obviously, if you want to go further back into previous Odd Job pods and Landfill, you can listen to our Man with the Golden Gun podcast, where we also discuss similar Hong Kong pastiches from a deeply problematic 1970s perspective. And with that, I will thank my co-hosts. Graham, thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Terry, thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Both the Odd Job Pod and the Action Movie Landfill will return soon with new episodes. And until then, dear listeners, would you like to know more? Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Action Movie!